Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
On strike, 1 year, 6 days. Miners rally today in Alabama, calling themselves the Warrior Met Warriors. And today on the show, a labor organizer and teacher on Amazon, postal workers 322 out of Pittsburgh, and the American Federation of Musicians in Detroit. Welcome to the Wednesday, April 6th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on a growing number of platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have actually three guests on the show today. Sean Richmond will be joining us. We've had him on the show a number of times. He was a regular correspondent with the magazine In These Times, and today he is published in the American Prospect, also In These Times, still doing that, New York Daily News, New York Times, Washington Post, and Vox. He came out with a book about a year and a half, 2 years ago, Tell the Bosses We're Coming, a new action plan for workers in the 21st century. Well, Sean spent a decade and a half as a union organizer and rep. He was a deputy director of organizing for the American Federation of Teachers, where he ran the union's National Charter School Organizing Division. And as an organizer, he's got a lot to say about what happened last Friday at the Amazon warehouse in New York, Staten Island, to be specific. And the story is quite amazing because these workers had no national union supporting them. They did this on their own. They formed their own group called the Amazon Labor Union. And there's been a number of posts written about what they have done. The guy that, in fact, we're trying to get on the show is Connor Spence. He's 26. He's vice president of membership for the Amazon Labor Union. And he's got no prior experience in labor organizing, and everything was grassroots. And in a nutshell, the way they did this, they exposed the union busters. That's right. They took pictures of union busters in the warehouse, and they posted them on Twitter to show what was going on. And as he put it, when, you know, cast some light on them, then everybody knows what's going on. So it was a kind of a stealth campaign. And maybe this is the new shape of organizing in America. I don't know. It was successful, 55% margin. Now, they have a long way to go, keep in mind, to get a collective bargaining agreement. And Amazon's going to fight this tooth and nail. In fact, they're going to the NLRB, saying the NLRB changed the rules in the middle of the game. So, I mean, there's a lot that needs to be unraveled here. And that process, we're going to save for Friday's show. Joyce Goldstein, who has spent over 40 years in labor circles. I mean, she is so prolific with the NLRB. She's going to talk to us on Friday about what those workers are facing. And like I said, it's a lot. But right now, let's savor the moment and talk about this victory, because Amazon spent $3,200 a day. To fight the union. And we still don't know the results out of Bessemer, Alabama. There's about 400 contested votes. That may take several weeks. So Sean Richmond's going to be our first guest. Kelly Dickey will be joining us on behalf of the Mail Handlers Union. This is Local 322. They're based in Pittsburgh. And she's going to talk about postal reform. We talked about this on the show, I'd say, about maybe 3 to 4 weeks ago. And this is the Postal Reform Act of 2022. It first passed the House, then the Senate. And I believe Biden signed off on it, but it received support from all four postal unions. And Kelly's with the National Association of Mail Handlers, which is part of LIUNA, our presenting sponsor here on the show. Apparently, too, there's a speed up on processing and delivering. I know a lot of people have been complaining about mail getting to their homes or businesses kind of late. Apparently, that is something that they're working on right now. So she'll be our second guest later in the show. George Troia will be joining us from Detroit, Michigan, and he heads Local 5 of the American Federation of Musicians. And he's going to talk about fair wages for fair work. Obviously, the musicians have had a tough time, especially dealing with the pandemic. And you had a lot of venues shut down. We'll talk about that and see what the future holds for them. DetroitMusicians.net is their website, DetroitMusicians.net. All right, big day down in Alabama today. Mine workers rallying. This was in McCalla, Alabama, which I believe is outside of Birmingham. In fact, Fred Redmond, who is the secretary treasurer of the AFL-CIO, is down there today. He was talking about that on our Friday show. Now, keep in mind, these miners have been on strike since April 1st of 2021. Count the days on that. That's 371 days. That's a long time to be on strike. And they're on strike for good reason. The company, well, they were bankrupt. And they went to the workers and they said, you got to take some pay cuts. They gave up more than $1.1 billion in order to pull the company out of debt. They agreed to that. And the owners said, you know what? When we turn a profit, you'll get that money back. Don't worry about it. And then some. Well, none of that happened. None of that happened. Here's the crazy thing. Coal prices have skyrocketed. Coal companies all around the nation are getting record prices for coal. And according to the Mine Workers Union, Warrior Met has already lost more than $1 billion, $1 billion in potential coal sales over the last year because they refused to settle this. The company brought in high-priced anti-labor law firms. One of them is called Akin Gump, to sit at the bargaining table instead of bringing back the skilled workforce, which could have increased sales, but they didn't do that. So they've hired scabs, and the scabs are not performing the work that the miners, the union miners, have been doing. So here we are, major rally today, and if you go to umwa.org, you'll get more information on the rally today. Cecil Roberts heading the Mine Workers Union and doing a great job on this. Approximately 7,000 union members at Southwest Airlines are voting on a contract that delivers industry-leading job protections and pay scales, as well as improved mandatory overtime rules. The machinists represent Southwest Airlines customer service employees, and its negotiating committee unanimously recommended a yes vote for the tentative agreement. The members will decide whether to ratify the four-year agreement in the coming weeks. I'm going to come in here from Rich Johnson. Rich is the chief of staff to the international president, and he said our members should be proud to have stood strong for a contract that they deserve. Thanks to this negotiating committee and the solidarity of our membership, we were able to secure a much stronger tentative agreement that will benefit our members at Southwest Airlines, their families, as well as the communities that they live in. Hundreds of members of the Animation Guild, which is part of IATSE, the International Association of Theatrical and Stage Employees, this would be Local 839, they came together last week for a large rally in Burbank, California, to demand a new deal for television and film animation workers. The guild is in ongoing talks to secure a contract that ends pay disparities, provides fair compensation for their labor, and changes the terms of their agreement with streaming platforms. Members are also showing their strength by organizing more animation workers, including employees at a production company called Titemouse. I want to do this rally 3 years from now and see us flood the streets, said Marguerite Scott, who's co-chair of the Writers' Craft Committee. That future isn't up to me. It's up to you. You can do it It's your money in their pockets. Take it back. How about that? And one more here before we break. The iron workers have become the 37th affiliated union of the Transportation Trades Department, part of the AFL-CIO, and the fourth new affiliate to join the Labor Alliance this year. Members of the union have worked on major construction projects around the country, including the Golden Gate Bridge, the Sears Tower, the Gateway Arch. General President Eric Dean said, "We are pleased to work with the Transportation Trades Department to advance the needs of our members." Speaking of the iron workers, they are a national sponsor, and they're going to be on the show tomorrow talking about organizing. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, organizing at Amazon. Sean Richmond, a labor organizer, talking to us right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And, of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is real simple, AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers, oh.aft.org is the website. All right, let's go to New York right now, joining us on our live line. And we've had this guy on in the past, especially when he was a regular contributor to In These Times. He still contributes to them, along with the American Prospect, the Daily News out of New York, the New York Times, Washington Post. Sean Richmond is his name, and he was the Deputy Director of Organizing for the American Federation of Teachers, where he ran the union's National Charter School Organizing Division. And I figured it'd be a good idea to bring him to the table today to talk about what happened at the Amazon warehouse in New York. And in case you don't know, they're going union, 55% margin that came out on Friday of last week. And it was a different kind of campaign. And that's why we want to talk to Sean about it. Hey, Sean, how we doing today, my brother?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Good, 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 good. I know you've been following this story, and as a labor organizer, I mean,
as a Staten Islander, I got to tell you, I walk my dog in the morning, and people, you know, walking their dogs talk about it too.
Yeah, yeah. This is big news. It's really big news, and it's a different kind of model, and I want to talk about that. And here's a union that had no affiliation with the AFL-CIO, certainly not the retail workers. I think, and I might be wrong on this, the retail workers were in discussions with them, but they decided to do this on their own. Talk to me about that part, because it's quite amazing. What do you think?
Well, I'm sure that lots of unions are reaching out to them right now. And, you know, ALU on Staten Island is not the only group of Amazon workers who are organizing independently. A couple of months back, there was this huge unfair labor practice charge settlement out of fulfillment centers in Chicago. That's a group that calls themselves Amazonians United, also consciously not organizing with an established union. there, they're a little bit more skeptical about going for an NLRB election. So they've been sort of, you know, just running campaigns, running petition campaigns, and constantly, you know, pressing on different employment practices at that fulfillment center. And the bosses had to deal with them. They've had to actually address grievances, and they've sort of won for themselves a little bit of sort of a form of meet and confer recognition. And so, you know, I mean, what's going on here? On the one hand, the workers are just doing pretty solid organizing. I mean, they're just kind of doing the stuff, you know, like they had an organizing committee. It was a little bit small, but it was definitely made up of the natural workplace leaders. So, you know, workers who are trusted by their coworkers, who are listened to when they, you know, offer their opinions. You know, they read books. It's always a good sign. They were reading William Z. Foster. I'm really going way back there, about 100 years. But that's where good union organizing begins. You know, they were doing escalating actions, both job actions and rallies outside the store, sort of cut through a lot of the fear of, you know, the Amazon's almost 24/7, you know, not anti-union campaign. I mean, even at a fulfillment center where there's not a whiff of union activity, the corporation is campaigning against a union at all times.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they just did really good basic organizing. There's a few things that they did that, you know, those of us who practice this stuff are fascinated by and want to look in on. I mean, you know, no union organizing director on payroll would file for an election with 30%, which is what they did. Usually we go for, you know, the supermajority, knowing that the boss is going to chip away. They went with the, you know, with the bare minimum number, partly to freeze the voter list, because the turnover at Amazon is so wild that you just, you know, their read on it was you could never get there. You could never get to the 70%, you know. And at charter schools, we had a similar problem. We couldn't get to 70% until the end of the school year. It just took that long. And then the clock was ticking because if the school year ended, we'd lose a bunch of people who would just quit and move on to another job.
Sure.
They froze the voter list. Then they got the voters' contact info. And like I said, they ran a good campaign. Why they went independent is also worth talking about. I think that unions, union organizing directors, union leadership need to do a bit of soul searching. I think one of the things that probably held them back is, you know, a lot of the people that were running this have experience with unions. They were leftists. You know, some of them took jobs at Amazon consciously because they want to unionize it. In the Chicago group, some of the people got there because unions put them in there as salts and then abandoned the campaign, right? And unions do have, you know, unions walk away from campaigns a lot. And so, you know, I think these workers wanted, you know, to be in control of their campaign, and know that it wasn't going to get shut down for other priorities or for, you know, issues with funding or whatever else. They wanted to know that their bargaining priorities weren't going to get mixed up with the Macy's department store workers or, you know, the UPS drivers. And so, you know, I think that unions need to, you know, really put these questions of democratic autonomy and real guarantees of like where the workers get to have their say. Not that they get to run the campaign entirely. If you're running a campaign through a union, I mean, any group of charter school teachers that I was working with, they couldn't make decisions about how to spend the union's money or you know exactly when we would file the election or things like that. But it was a conversation. It was something that we had to come to an agreement on. And a lot of unions, I think, sort of say, well, we'll address that when we get to it. That makes people really uneasy when they're, you know, they're putting their livelihoods on the line. They want some guarantees that they're going to have some real say here, that they're going to have some real power in the situation over the things that they can control, which is what are we doing as a group of workers and as a union.
Sean, let's talk about the union busters that Amazon hired. And I was reading they paid their anti-union consultants $3,200 a day. $4.3 million in the last year. And this is divvied up in various locations. I know they're spending a lot down in Bessemer, Alabama. But in Staten Island, what they did, the Amazon Labor Union, they exposed them. And there was pictures on Twitter. And a lot of people, and you know how these busters, union busters work. I mean, they try to be your friend saying, oh, you don't want to pay all those dues. You know, you're going to have more take-home money. They kind of cozy up to you. They basically lie to you. I mean, let's be honest. But in this case, and maybe you could talk about other organizing drives, they really zeroed in on the people that infiltrated the plant, the union busters. Can you speak to that? Because don't you think that was the game changer here?
I mean, it's also a very established and effective union organizing tactic. At the hotel employees union, it's a part of their organizing model. Is to just shut down the anti-union captive audience meetings. So it's a part of the training of the organizing committee. And they do it in various ways. Sometimes they do it, you know, with jokes and with mocking. Sometimes they just do it by chanting, just like keep chanting, and they can't get their words out. And the workers do come away feeling much more powerful. We did as much of that as we could at AFT in the charter school stuff. And it is very effective sometimes. You know, not all union busters are the same, first of all. And, you know, it's this tremendous cottage industry that I think we need to talk more about. Particularly for smaller firms. I mean, Amazon's got more money than God. But you know, in the charter school world, I'd watch, you know, a charter school would, you know, oh, we've got a union, I guess, you know, what do? They hire a law firm, and the law firm says, well, here's, you know, eight different, you know, consultants you can get. And once the consultants get their hooks into an employer, you know, they're getting paid, so they'll just keep doing it forever. They just want to keep the gravy train rolling. And, you know, I've seen some that were incredibly ineffective. You know, they just sort of drone on in a monotone, almost like Ben Stein, you know, about your dues and the union's going to make you go on strike.
Right.
I've seen some that are incredibly scary and effective. One group looked like a biker gang that came out of Hollywood Central Casting. Put the workers in round the clock captive audience meetings, separated them so that the leaders weren't in the room, and lied all throughout the day. In one meeting, they'd say, oh, I used to be an organizer for the nurses union. Another one, I used to be a Grand Lodge rep for the machinists. So the workers' heads were reeling because they didn't know what to believe, because they were just lying and making, like, I mean, illegal threats, you know, of physical violence and things like that. So not all anti-union consultants are the same, and not all try to be your friend. But to the extent that you can expose them and expose how much money they're making, that's not going to your paycheck, and the extent that you can sort of cut through the fear, you can beat them, which is what the group on Staten Island shows.
Yep. Well, they still got a lot of work ahead of them because they got to try to get that CBA, that collective bargaining agreement. Amazon is going to challenge this with the NLRB. So this is one that we're going to have a lot of conversations with you and various people on the show in the months and probably years ahead. So, Sean, we're going to leave it on that note. Also, I just want to call attention to your book, Tell the Bosses We're Coming, A New Action Plan for Workers in the 21st Century. It sounds like these guys read this book, but is that still available, by the way?
Still available, Monthly Review Press, or you could buy it on Amazon and get workers passing it around before it goes in a box.
Okay, we'll leave it on that note. Sean Richmond on our live line. We'll definitely keep in touch. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with Kelly Dickey on behalf of the Mail Handlers Union out of Pittsburgh. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steel workers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, we are available on a number of platforms and growing, just to throw out a few: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings. So right now, let's go to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Joining us on line number two is Kelly Dickey, no stranger to the show. She's been on a number of times. She comes to us from the Mail Handlers Union, which is affiliated with our presenting sponsor, LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America. And the Mail Handlers national website is npmhu.org and local 322. Kelly, you said about 1,000 members. Is that right? Is that pretty steady there?
Yes, we've been slowly but surely growing. There's been quite a bit of hiring. So, yeah, we capped over 1,000 just after December. So it's a good thing.
Good, 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 good. Well, a lot has happened since we last had you on the show. And I'm referencing the Postal Service Reform Act of 2022. You and I were talking about it. And finally, after years, oh, my God, I go back to, I think it was 2006 when George W. Bush was president, and they decided, they being the Congress and the president, decided, well, the Postal Service has to pre-fund all the benefits and health care. What was it, 75 years into the future? Wasn't that the case, Kelly?
Yes, sir. We had to pre-fund the retiree benefits 75 years. That means pre-fund retirement for workers that weren't even born yet. It was just unheard of.
I'd like to know who came up with that idea. I mean, there's no there's no company, no business on the planet that can exist. And I know that was draining the coffers to, I believe, like $5 billion a year. But anyway, I guess that's all in the past. So talk to me about this Postal Service Reform Act. And I guess is it part of the operation now? Where are we with that?
Absolutely. It was, like you said, it was something that needed to be done and took a long time getting here. But now that it is in play, we certainly have a much brighter future. Yes, economically speaking, we are still losing money because parcels are up and first-class mail is down. It's not a one-for-one ratio. In other words, think about it. A parcel, maybe 12 by 12 by 12, that takes up the same amount of space on a truck or in a in a plant as maybe 300 first-class letters. So dollar for dollar, it's not equal. So even though parcels are up, with first-class being down, we still tend to lose money. But this is certainly something that will help us from losing so much money now that we do not have to pre-fund the retiree benefits that far into the future. And we're all taking a big sigh of relief since that has passed. The other part of that, of course, is there is now a Medicare integration for health benefits. That's going to start being put into place January 1st, 2023. And there are different provisions in place depending on if you're already retired, if you're about to retire, or you're going to retire sometime in the future on how that will all play out. But overall, everybody seems to be happy with it. That, too, will help save some costs in the future. And like I said, hopefully we're headed to a brighter future, economically speaking.
Kelly, let's go back on the Medicare part. So when somebody in the Mail Handlers Union would retire, they would go on a different plan? They wouldn't be allowed on Medicare? Can you explain that part to me? I don't understand that.
As it stands now, prior to this passing, someone that retired, 90% of the time I would even say, would just carry on whatever benefits they received at work into their retirement, and there was no requirement to enroll in Medicare at all. Uh-huh. Now, that came with a hefty cost because having to continue, you know, funding that health benefit for retirees when they're not, you know, opting not to go into Medicare meant a higher cost for the Postal Service as a whole. Therefore, Medicare integration is a way to help curb those costs. So how it stands is that any current retired postal employees will have an option come January 1st to either stay in their health benefit, their, you know, employer-funded health benefit plan, or at that point they can enroll in a new postal-only plan that includes enrollment in Medicare Parts A and B. And in doing so, they will not be charged. Like if they didn't, you know, the rule is that if you didn't enroll in Medicare Part B as soon as you became eligible, you get hit with some type of, you know, penalty. With this in play, they are going to waive those penalties for any current annuitants who want to take that option.
Okay.
As far as in the future, though, all retirees will now be forced into taking Medicare Parts A and B. And therefore, the cost of their health insurance, even if they choose to continue on with a postal or an employer plan, it'll be less costly to both the postal service as well as to the retiree, because Medicare will be taking a brunt of that cost now.
I see. Okay, long overdue. Again, this was a 15-plus year battle on trying to change what happened in 2006. It's fine. And did Biden sign off on this? I didn't catch that. I know we were talking about this a while, but is it official now? Is this law?
I do not believe so. I've not heard that he has, but we have all indications that he will.
Yeah, well, he's a little busy right now with a couple of other things.
Yeah, with, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, the world is collapsing as we speak here. But, yeah, oh, well, this is certainly good news. All right, let's talk about package processing and delivering. And the other issue here is this guy, Louis DeJoy, that's still the Postmaster General. And I remember when he came on board, he was getting rid of some mail sorting machines. I couldn't figure that one out. Can you bring us up to speed on what he's done, where he is now, and where he's going? And I'm wondering how long he's going to be there. But anyway, that's another story. But what's going on with processing? Because from what I've been gathering, some of this work might be sent off to another company. In other words, privatizing a certain part of the Postal Service. What's the story here, Kelly?
Yes. In his 10-year plan, he plans, part of the 10-year plan that he put in front of Congress, and what for all his intentions are, is that he wants to move more of the mail via truck as opposed to via plane. Now, I have to admit, and it's seldom I like to do that, but he is actually correct in that I think that it will be, benefit the Postal Service by and large quite a bit. However, here is the stickler. We have to remember that DeJoy has $70 million invested in companies that compete with the U.S. Postal Service. So he has ulterior motives, let's say. Mm-hmm. Part of this is, of course, the company that he used to run, which is XPO. It's a trucking company. And, of course, in his plan, all this trucking or this addition of trucking mail, I'm sure, is planned on going to his former company, XPO. Also part of that is that if we're going to be moving mail more so via trucks than we are planes, this is going to require there to be more facilities throughout the country for these trucks. They can only carry so much. So there's going to have to be a lot more pit stops, so to speak, to offload mail for that area, pick up mail, keep it going, moving on down the line. These are what we usually call surface transport centers. Some of them and a lot of them are postal. However, Mr. DeJoy has already started subcontracting that work out. In other words, what he's doing is he's hiring private companies to work in these surface transport centers. These are non-postal workers. And they're the ones working there that are going to be offloading the trucks, reloading the trucks, possibly even sometimes processing and separating some of that mail while it's in that facility. So we're definitely not happy about that at all.
So is the National Union pushing back on this? Are they lobbying members of Congress saying they need to change this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We do have a provision in our contract that states that there's a committee that has obviously union members on it as well as postal people on it that are supposed to sit down and talk about this. But it doesn't really, the contract language doesn't require necessarily any one thing or another. It just requires them to sit down and talk to us about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you can probably guess, most of those talks are just that, talks. It's a lot of fluff, you know what I mean? But they pretty much can still do what they want to do. And so that, like you said, requires us to then start pushing on people on Congress, to the public. You know, you don't want people that are not postal workers handling your mail. Postal
right.
workers, you know, we take oaths. We have a lot to lose if we, you know, mess with anybody's mail. These people that they're, you know, who knows where they came from or what process they was used to hire them, they have no risk. So, you know, you don't want that with your mail.
No, you don't. Did I hear you say that DeJoy is like moving some of the delivery to XPO, which is his former company? And when you said that, first of all, is that the case? Is that real? Because it seems like it's illegal.
Right. You would think it would be. But again, we have seen, like, as far as the behind the scenes, as far as contracts, I'm not privy to that information. But what I have personally seen and been told about are XPO truckers moving mail. Now, we did, even before DeJoy came along, you know, the post office did have a contract with XPO, but it was very, very minimal, very, very limited. But since DeJoy has become the Postmaster General, we are seeing a lot more of those trucks moving our mail.
Oh, boy. That's one to watch, no doubt about that. So what's the status with him? Because I know there's a Postal Board of Governors, and Biden can't just say, hey, you're out of here. That has to come from the Board of Governors, but he has appointed some people that are probably questioning DeJoy on these matters. So what's your gut telling here? Is he going to be out of here if more of this comes to light?
I would certainly hope so. Yes, we definitely have, because of Biden, a postal-friendly domination of that Board of Governors. You know, you have to remember, we needed postal reform first and foremost. We
right.
needed it as far as the unions wanted it. DeJoy wanted it to keep the company, quote-unquote, that he runs afloat. So everybody was playing nicey-nicey until postal reform got passed. Now that postal reform has passed, granted, we now can push towards DeJoy to either do what's right or the Board of Governors to get rid of him. But you have to remember, too, he also no longer needs us as unions. So that gives him kind of carte blanche to go rogue if he wants to. And that's what we fear will happen. So at this point, what we're hoping is that the Board of Governors, too, now that postal reform is behind them, they don't need to, you know, kiss up to him, so to speak.
Right.
They don't need, you know, him and his votes anymore. Maybe they will, you know, come down a little stricter on him and, you know, have him do what's right or say, we're going to get rid of you. That's our hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in the time being, we just have to be vocal on these issues and continue the lobbying in Congress and all that. One more question here before you go. How's morale now? I think it's got to be somewhat better, especially going through the pandemic and all that. We're still in the pandemic, but Kelly, how would you gauge it right now?
Well, it's definitely getting better. Like you heard from my local, we've increased rather significantly. I believe that that new number, I think it's roughly right now at 1,035 members for Local 322. That's a good 10% to 20% jump from where we've always been, at least in the past 10 years. So to his credit, again, he is hiring a lot more because he does, as a businessman, see that a lot of overtime doesn't behoove the post office, and it's his intention to cut back on overtime by hiring more workers. And again, that's a good thing. That has brought morale up good, too, because it gives a sense of security, mm-hmm. whether that's realized or not, it remains to be seen. But for now, morale's pretty good on the work floor because people say, hey, they're hiring, you know, we're growing, things are looking good. And now that this postal reform's passed, even better.
Yeah, yeah, at least we got that thing out of the way. My gosh. And we'll definitely keep our eyes on the White House here when Biden officially signs that. But it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time, no doubt. NPMHU.org. That's the website for the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, part of LIUNA, which is our presenting sponsor. We certainly do appreciate that. And we appreciate you, Kelly Dickey. So you keep up the fight, and we'll talk down the road. How's that sound?
Sounds good. It's always an honor to speak to you and your listeners.
Thank you. It's an honor to talk to you as well. All right, quick break. George Troya is president of the Detroit Musicians Union. That'll be AFM Local 5. He's coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. I was talking at the beginning of the show about the coal miners' strike, and they had a big rally down in Alabama today at Warrior Met. And we're talking a strike that is now 371 days long. Not the longest strike. You got to check this story. After Charter Spectrum purchased Time Warner Cable and tried to upend the collective bargaining agreement with Local Union 3, this is IBEW Local 3 in New York, 1,800 workers walked off the job. You know when that was? 5 years ago. That's right. Charter Spectrum, whose CEO Tom Rutledge is compensated to the tune of $100 million per year. $100 million per year has been heavily criticized for inadequate broadband access, slow internet speeds, and high rates. Despite the company's failed attempts to decertify the union with replacement workers at 5 years, it is currently the longest ongoing strike in America. Can you believe that? They went on strike in 2017. We have to check in with those brothers and sisters at Local 3 IBEW. We're talking 1,800 workers out for 5 years. Amazing. We're having a bit of difficulty lining up with our third guest today. George Troya was supposed to be checking in with us from Detroit, and he is president of Local 5 of the American Federation of Musicians, DetroitMusicians.net. Maybe he had a late night, so we'll have to reschedule with him. I want to call attention to the Building Trades Apprenticeship Fair, which is going to be at Max Hayes High School next week, April 12th, 6 to 7:30. And if you want to get some more information, call Doreen Cannon, 216-459-0099, extension 143. And we're talking about a career opportunity available, a number of trades, bricklayers, carpenters, cement masons, electrical workers, glazers, heat and frost insulators, iron workers. In fact, we'll have the iron workers on the show tomorrow. Laborers, operating engineers, painters, pipe fitters, plumbers, roofers, and waterproofers, sheet metal workers. And we're talking no student debt, and you could be making six figures. It's crazy what's going on in the trades. The demand is so darn high. I want to take you to Washington right now, and David Westin does a segment on Bloomberg TV called Balance of Power. And he had Liz Shuler on the show recently, Liz, president of the AFL-CIO, and she was talking about jobs in America, the momentum that workers have at the bargaining table. I mean, good example. Look what's going on with organizing. You heard us talk earlier in the show about Amazon in New York. A number of strikes last year going into this year where workers got significant pay increases. What was it? Kellogg's, one local, I believe it was Kansas, 15% over 3 years. It's happening. It's happening. So let's listen to what Liz Shuler had to say with David Westin on Balance of Power.
This is Balance of Power on Bloomberg Television and Radio. I'm David Westin. We're in the midst of a worker shortage across the country. It's really affecting the role of unions across the country. Welcome now, Liz Shuler. She's president of the AFL-CIO, representing over 12 million of those workers nationwide. So, Ms. Shuler, thank you so much for being back with us. One of the things that we're all focused on is inflation. I'm curious, when you go into collective bargaining negotiations right now, what is the role of inflation in your negotiations?
Well, thank you for having us on the show today, David. And you're absolutely right. When I'm traveling the country talking to workers who are at the collective bargaining table or on strike, costs are going up and they're seeing inflation starting to eat away at the gains they're making. So that's certainly a topic on everyone's mind. And it provides urgency for workers who are negotiating across that table with their employers. And as they see companies raking in, you know, great profits during this pandemic, they just want a piece of that pie. And so it's more important than ever that that collective bargaining process yield results for workers.
And what are we seeing in terms of labor management relations across the country? I know there's a teacher strike going on, I think, up in Minneapolis right now. We've got organization efforts with respect to both Amazon and, for example, Starbucks, two of the biggest names. How is the shortage of workers affecting that?
Well, we keep saying there isn't a labor shortage as much as there is a shortage of good, high-paying jobs in this country. And you just mentioned a number of different sectors that workers are rising up. They are fed up with making sacrifices during this pandemic and being called essential one minute and then treated as expendable another. And so they are lifting their voices. They are coming together collectively to demand more. And in fact, they made sacrifices during the pandemic, mandatory overtime. We saw workers at Nabisco who were on strike months ago who had worked around the clock to make those cookies and crackers while people were locked away in their homes, but they couldn't get back to their own families because they were working so much overtime. So that's why we saw this uprising last fall. We called Striketober, and it continues today.
And let's go up to Capitol Hill for a moment, if we could, because we talked a lot over the months and years about the PRO Act, as it's called. Right now, we have a war in Ukraine. We've got fights over presidential nominees to various positions. What happened to the PRO Act? And most specifically, if it were enacted tomorrow, how would it change some of the organizing attempts across the country?
Well, working people, all they want is a fair shake at work. And they want to be able to provide for their families, make a decent living, put food on the table, and take care of their kids. And right now, the economy is broken for working people. And the PRO Act would fix that because it would allow workers to come together without fear, form a union so that they could have more of a voice and more power in the workplace. And labor law right now is tilted in favor of employers. We're seeing it at Amazon where workers are trying to organize and they've faced intimidation. They've faced threats. They've even been fired for speaking out. And so the PRO Act would actually allow workers to come together without fear. Because that's what usually happens when workers try to form a union, is employers don't like it. So they'll do everything they can to discourage it. And that's exactly what we're seeing at Amazon now. And in fact, the ballots for that election are due today and they'll start counting on Monday.
And what are the prospects for the PRO Act, given what's going on with the Senate?
So we are continuing to pass for the PRO Act, of course, in Congress, but we're also pushing at the grassroots level because we know the filibuster has blocked progress in the Senate, and we're not going to let that stop us. We are emphasizing grassroots action. So at the ground level, and that's where we know Congress responds best, is when their constituents make their voices heard. And so our members coming together with community partners and allies are pushing in congressional districts all across this country. So whether it's in Congress, and continuing to push in whatever legislative vehicles there might be. Also at the grassroots level, we think that that's where the rubber meets the road.
Liz, it's always a real pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much for the time. It's Liz Schuler. She's AFL-CIO president.
Again, that's a segment David Weston of Bloomberg TV did recently with Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO. By the way, there's going to be a vote at the AFL-CIO, and we'll be following this closely in June. June 12th, the AFL-CIO convention, the Constitutional Convention, will take place in the city of Philadelphia. And at that time, they will vote on giving Liz and the team over there, Fred Redmond, the number two person. I don't know who's number three right now, but it'll give them a multi-year deal at the AFL-CIO. And Lisbon's been doing a great job since she filled in for the late, great Richard Trumka. Want to talk about Randy Weingarten. Oh, my gosh. Randy is president of the American Federation of Teachers and is in Poland today to see firsthand the work being done to support refugee women and children from Ukraine. She was invited by the Polish Teachers Union, ZNP, and she's meeting with refugee teachers and students from Ukraine and educators and healthcare workers from Poland. She's visiting Polish classrooms that have taken in students from Ukraine and meeting with Ukrainian refugee teachers in Poland who are connecting remotely with their students who remain in Ukraine or who are living outside of Ukraine since the Russian invasion began. Now, through the AFT's partnership with First Book, Randy is delivering children's books and language-appropriate educational materials to the Polish schools that are integrating Ukrainian teachers and students. And check this out. The AFT has raised $100,000 to send to ZNP, the Ukrainian Teachers Union, VPONU, and other humanitarian and labor groups. The priorities of these funds will be to help the union that is housing refugee children who cross the border without parents, and there's a lot of them, believe me, integrating Ukrainian children into Polish schools and supporting the needs of Ukrainian teachers and students that are still in Ukraine. Comment here from Randy. We stand in solidarity with our fellow educators and healthcare workers in the Ukrainian and Polish labor movement, with the educators, the students, and families across the border in Ukraine, and with their democratic government in this moment of their trial and need. Our visit will shine a light not only on the impact of Putin's war, but on the persistence, compassion and bravery of the teachers dedicated to protecting and helping their kids learn amid Russia's heinous attack wherever they might be in the region. And you can follow Randy right now on Twitter. It's at R Weingarten, and it's G-A-R-T-E-N, R-W-E-I-N-G-A-R-T-E-N. And if you go to the AFT website, aft.org, you can also donate and help them out, because I'll tell you, it's tragic to see what's going on. Now, here's the good news. We're going to have Randy on the show this coming Monday. That's right. We moved some guests around, and she'll be, I believe she'll be coming back this weekend, and we'll have her on the show on Monday's edition of America's Workforce. So looking forward to that. But once again, and we talk about this on the show so many times, what unions do, not just in the community, but in this case, in the world. And the Ukrainian people are very, very friendly and very, very engaging with unions. The International Confederation of Unions and Trade Unions has a big presence in Ukraine. So I'm sure they had a lot to do with making sure that this was going to happen, especially in Poland, and helping out the Ukrainian children. So more to come. That will be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the iron workers and Senator Sherrod Brown. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.